This is KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. An ongoing battle between Carroll residents living in rapidly deteriorating bug and rodent-infested public housing and the Alexander County Housing Authority accused of mismanaging federal funds and alleged civil rights violations came to a head last week. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, who took over the Housing Authority a year ago, announced that nearly 185 families would be forced to move. Investigative reporter Molly Parker with the Southern Illinoisan newspaper in Carbondale has been covering the story since the beginning.
We started reporting on this series in August of 2015. Prior to that, around April, HUD had stepped up its monitoring efforts of the Alexander County Housing Authority in its response to the cited deficiencies there. They had pulled a contract where the former executive director was receiving funds for consulting work that he may or may not have been performing. They placed in there a temporary executive director who held dual roles in Jefferson County, Illinois, where Mount Vernon is located. And in Cairo, it was just meant to be a temporary situation. That person came down and offered some emergency care and attention to the Housing Authority. When I met with him, he'd been on the job a couple months, and he said that when he first got there, they were totally out of money and at risk of having the lights shut off because they couldn't pay their utility bill. It was that extreme on the financial side. Let alone the living conditions had deteriorated to the point of inhumane living conditions by our standards in the United States, most certainly, for those residents living there. And, of course, you have to believe that had been the case for years, even though the financial situation finally came to a head here a couple years ago, more recently in 2015.
And when we say he, who are we referring to at this particular time?
That was Tom Upchurch. And he had a temporary, I want to say, four-month contract where he was duly assigned working at Jefferson County and in Alexander County.
And so when we're talking about some of these allegations, one, there were some actual receipts that you all came up with and found out that were used for different dining out experiences, drinking, gifts, traveling expenses. What other types of things, and how long was this going on?
When we began reporting on the story, we met Mr. Upchurch down there, who, again, was in that temporary role, who agreed to show us around as to what the extent of the problems were in housing. And we were provided at that point with or requested some documents from HUD about what had caused them to begin to intervene more regularly with the Alexander County Housing Authority and their oversight function. And there were several reports, two or three, and one of them laid out some allegations of misspending of federal funds from accounts that were intended to be used for upkeep and maintenance for administrative costs. It wasn't extremely detailed as to what that meant and why that was happening. So we sent a FOIA request to the Housing Authority while it was under Mr. Upchurch's administrative time there, and we were provided with, I want to say, and again, I don't have this in front of me, what the FOIA specifically requested, but we asked for all expense accounts, credit card statements, travel reimbursements, anything that was spent on employees, essentially. And we got back volumes of information and attempted to sort through it to determine how much was spent. It was really difficult to make heads or tails out of it. One of the situations that they're facing down there, and the HUD folks that have taken over since will tell you, is that their record keeping was a mess, just a complete disaster. And so that was apparent to me as I tried to match reimbursements to receipts to credit cards. You know, what was there? It would be almost impossible to tell what was used on a company credit card. Was any of that paid back by employees? There were certainly questionable expenses that look like personal items, gifts for board members that seemed to be excessive, travel that was extremely excessive. But again, as for a specific dollar figure, it was very hard to arrive at with the way that the information was delivered to us and that relating back to the very poor record keeping of the ACHA.
Well, going back to the whole idea of like leadership in the Alexander County Housing Authority, between 1989 and to 2013, James Wilson was the former director of the Alexander County Housing Authority. What role did he play in all of this?
Well, as you just mentioned, he was the executive director for about 24 years. So he was the longest serving executive director in recent history. I can't tell you when the housing units began to decline into the condition they're in, but obviously it didn't happen overnight. I think anyone would say that's a very obvious statement, that this was over the course of years or decades even. But certainly in more recent history, it seemed that they had been neglected beyond the point of repair. Now, these units are very old. Even if they had been maintained, they are 75 years old. They were built in 1942, I believe, is the date HUD provided us. So they are very old, but as anyone that lives in an old home knows, you can keep old things pretty nice, but it does take a lot of maintenance and upkeep. And it appeared that that had been largely neglected at the two housing units that have been the center of the most scrutiny and questions, although none of the ACHA's housing units are in, housing developments are in great shape. The two that have been the focus of HUD's attention and where the residents will be asked to move out of, they're just in the worst shape. Some others are just slightly better than the worst shape.
Well, we'll get back to the conditions in a moment, but he also made a surprising admission on record stating to some degree that he benefited financially from how they managed their funds, and saying in a quote, he said, "We lived it up too good, and we didn't see this coming, and we thought it would last forever. And when the cuts came, we weren't in a position to handle it." That's exactly right. Can you explain or talk about what that meant and a little bit on who this particular "we" he was referring to?
I can. When we wrote our first story, I reached out to Mr. Wilson, as any journalist would, when we go down, you know, it was after we had returned from viewing the housing. And when I say we, that was me and a photographer here at the Southern, and we had met with Mr. Upchurch and spent the day. It was a Friday, and you know, I remember feeling very heavy about the whole thing. Like, how could this happen? What is going on here? And I had read the day before, I had gotten the HUD reports that I mentioned earlier, and it talked about the director and the mismanagement, misspending. I don't remember if the director was mentioned by name or not in that report, but I came to learn that that was Mr. Wilson, who had been there the largest amount of time, and even after his retirement in 2013 had remained on under several very oddly written contracts that allowed him payment despite lack of records, again, accounting for what he was doing while he was on these consulting contracts. But so, of course, you know, I reached out to him to find out his side of the story, as you do. This was still a very new story to me. I didn't understand all the dynamics of what was going on. And so I just told him, hey, you know, we're writing this story. I've been down here. I have these HUD documents. Would you like to speak to me? And he did. He said, yes, I'll meet you tomorrow morning. This was Saturday. And so we met in Carbondale, and we talked for a couple hours. And largely throughout that interview, he defended his tenure. At one point, he told me that he felt like the conditions had only deteriorated since he left, since he was sort of forced out of his contract by HUD, which I find very questionable because, again, those units did not get in the condition that they are in over a matter of a year or two or even five or six. It was obviously a fairly long-standing problem there. And we just talked about all the specific allegations that were in the report about the excessive travel claims and so on and so forth, about contracts and retirement deals. And again, he defended a lot of it, but as we kept talking, and I was surprised by some of the things that he was saying in this interview. He knew I was a reporter. He knew we were taping the interview. And yet he was just very openly talking about the benefits that employees had received, and again, and somewhat defensively about it, saying, "Well, we're one of the only employers in town. You know, why shouldn't I provide these benefits for people?" And as we continue to talk about, well, but what about the residents? How come they haven't had, you know, any upkeep and repair? Is there any excuse for the way things have gotten? And he finally made the comment that you referenced at one point in the interview about halfway through. And so he was referencing benefits, contracts, travel, and so on, and saying, well, you know, yeah, maybe we didn't do the best job managing things, but hey, neither did the state of Illinois. And when he said we, he later clarified, he said, you know, James Wilson doesn't take, he referenced himself that way, and he said, James Wilson doesn't take all the responsibility. You know, it was also the board that went along with it. It was also the union that sat here with us and did all this. So he was very eager to point fingers at others to join in on the spending that he questioned as being lived it up too good.
So on one side, you have those living the life of luxury, and then you have the other side, the people who are living in these buildings, these apartments. The living conditions of the buildings in question, which are McBride and Elmwood Apartments, have been described as being third world. As it stands now, are they fit and safe for people to live in? What has been going on in those places? What do they look like?
Those units are not fit for habitation, and that is not my opinion. That is in the documents that we have been provided through architectural reviews that have been commissioned on behalf of the Housing Authority. More recently, there are structural problems, and there are significant health and safety risks that are being, there are significant health and safety issues in those units where there are families living as well as a large number of children. And I don't know the exact number of children, but it's around 100, I was told at last count. And it's about 185 families and about 400 people total. So many of the units, of course, house multiple people in their family units. There's extreme infestation, despite HUD is apparently, they mentioned at this at the last meeting, they have a $150,000 contract for infestation control, but it is not any better. We were there a year after HUD took over, and of course prior to HUD coming in and placing that authority into receivership and the feds taking over there, and the infestation is about the same. I couldn't tell really any difference. You know, I didn't do any sort of scientific study on that, but it was still extremely bad. And I have to believe there are vacant units. So if there are units that are vacant and infested, or if there are it only takes one person who maybe isn't keeping their unit clean. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, because you think about it, I don't know about you, but there are occasions when I don't wash my dishes every day from the night before. I mean, we're not talking about filth, which is regular, they can't even have any regular life in terms of, you know, procrastination on not making sure everything is boxed up, sealed up, put away every, you know, right away after every meal. And even that at this point isn't really curing the problem, because it appears to be in the walls. It's so extreme that I don't know that there's any amount of control, infestation control, that can fix that. That's one of the major things. There's mold. And many of the children, the parents of the children, complain that is further aggravating and or causing the asthma that the children that they have. Maybe they were born with asthma, but there is the doctors have told us that mold can aggravate that problem. So there's that. And again, the mold is something that is not something you can just scrub off. The parents will scrub it off, and it's back in a couple days or a week because it's in the walls. There's plumbing issues. In a lawsuit, there's one woman complains of the upstairs bathroom leaking down into her kitchen from the toilet, the toilet water leaking down into the kitchen. There are water backs up into sinks, sewage backs up into people's sinks. There's some pretty extreme issues like that. There's electrical issues. There's wiring issues, on and on and on.
And when we're talking about infestation, what types of infestations are we talking about?
A variety of things. Bed bugs were a major problem at one point and in certain units. I think they have done a pretty good job of trying to eradicate the bed bugs. And again, the problem with that is it would take one person who, say, a unit gets infested, and so they throw out their furniture. And this would happen to folks. They would get the bed bugs, and their furniture would be ruined. And so they drag their couch out to the dumpster, and somebody else might see that couch and think it looks pretty nice and drag it back into their unit. So while one unit got rid of the bed bugs, another took it on. And bed bugs are really, really hard to control, as you know, from, you know, if you've ever been to a hotel that got them or whatever. I mean, getting bed bugs is not a sign of uncleanliness. They're just once they're rooted into a furniture or carpet, et cetera, they're extremely hard to get rid of. So they were battling that. Like I said, I think that got a little better, but the parts that didn't get better, mice, not just a few mice, just tons of mice, and anytime we were there, we would see these little cockroaches all over everything, in the kitchen, in the living room, in the carbon monoxide detector test, you know, the fire alarm and the carbon monoxide test, you'd pull those out, and they would just be covered in bugs to the point that, for one resident, her testing kit stopped working because it was clogged with bugs and bug eggs. Larva, whatever that is. So it was extreme. She, one of the women we interviewed, she pulled on her drawer in her child's room in the dresser. She pulled the door open, and it was her little girl's undergarments drawer, and just bugs just came crawling out. You know, people, that's not just like a bug or two. You know, I don't want to mislead people. We all get bugs in our homes. No big deal, right? You take it outside or you squish it or whatever you're going to do. But this is beyond their control.
With all this going on, how and when did the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development get involved?
Well, HUD is the oversight agency for local housing authorities. For all of them. So, in some senses, HUD's always been involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you all the requirements, but every housing authority that operates public housing or voucher programs has interaction with the federal agency, even though the people running the show at the ground level are locally appointed and locally hired. They're local managers. It's their own government structure. But HUD, you know, because they take federal money, HUD has an oversight role. Like I said, HUD began to increase its interaction with the Housing Authority in 2015, and really even prior to that. Some of the information we have where they were citing problems dates back to 2010, and it appears that by 2014 they had done a more extensive review. And part of this is, you know, they cite these problems. They have so long to respond, so long to correct them. They entered into a compliance agreement at one point to try to correct things. But as these things kept going on and on, and they weren't correcting them, not only were they not correcting them, but the local managers were even saying, we're not doing anything wrong, you know, we don't need to listen to you, you don't know what you're talking about, sort of thumbing their nose at HUD's suggestions that things were amiss. And so in February of 2016, it was February 22nd, 2016, HUD came down and announced that they had placed the Housing Authority into receivership, that the board was dismissed, and that they were in control, that they would be the operating managers for however long was necessary of the Housing Authority.
And how did that go over?
Well, I think at that point, a lot of the residents were excited to see that, because there was some drama about who was going to be the next director and some contention about who they had selected for that position. They weren't happy with the selection. A lot of them were. Again, I don't want to speak overly broadly. I'm not saying no one was happy with the local management, but overall, they were glad to see HUD step in, because they felt like ultimately that there was no local director who was going to be able to make it right, given the situation and how far it had fallen financially and how serious the financial situation was, I should say. And so I think they were eager and appreciative of HUD finally taking action and stepping in and saying, this is so serious, we're going to come down here and do this.
Now, last week, things weren't as joyous as they were initially. there was a pretty big announcement made by HUD, and they basically said that Carroll residents living in those public housing buildings and apartments that we just mentioned and talked about would have to move out. Why was that decision made?
Well, so HUD had been here 1 year, give or take. It was February 22nd, so a little over a year by the time they made that announcement, about 14 months. And I just mentioned a lot of people were excited to see the HUD managers come down here and take ownership and say they were going to assess the situation and do what they could to rectify it. You know, months and months went by, and there were not improvements. There were not significant improvements made. They changed the locks on some units. They tried to do a better job with infestation control, but ultimately people continued to live in the housing that had far exceeded its lifespan, given the fact that there had been very little upkeep and maintenance. And so I think people were growing weary. They weren't sure what was going to happen. There were a lot of rumors floating around about, oh, are they going to tear them down? Are they going to build something new for us? And I think that was what the hope was throughout this whole time, was that HUD would come down, that HUD was the only agency, if you will, that could make this right, that could come up with the federal funds to build new housing for these folks, to get them out of their old housing, whatever they were going to do, or renovate, or whatever they thought might be possible. And this is, you know, I do believe this is a crisis. It's a really slow-moving crisis, though. You know, sometimes you have a natural disaster, and everybody has to react immediately. And in this case, it's just been dragging out so long. And there's also just a lot of heartbreak with that time span that keeps ticking by. And so eventually, you know, HUD knew at a year point they were going to have to do something. They were going to have to announce something. My understanding is that they did do a lot of work throughout the last year, at least according to them, to the HUD officials, to try to find ways to come up with solutions for alternative housing within the city of Caro. But they weren't able to attract any private developers to partner with, or nonprofits, or anyone to supply the number of units that they would need to replace the ones that they are going to eventually demolish. And so they ultimately made the decision, as was announced last Monday, that they would begin moving residents out in May, and that they don't have a timeline for that, but had estimated that can take anywhere from 9 to 11 months once they start that process. It's 185 families that live on those two developments. It's about 400 people.
What does that mean now for these families? Are they going to get any type of help, some closure financially for the next step? Because there was a meeting shortly after, and it was pretty heated, because a lot of the residents were like, this is home. You know, we don't want to leave Caro. This is our home. And the options aren't that vast in the area. So what's next for them?
Well, I wish I had better answers for you and for them, or that HUD did, but I don't know all the answers. HUD has said they will. It's not just, hey, you got to go, see you later. You know, it's not that drastic. They are offering vouchers, transportable vouchers, to every resident, which is they can take to anywhere in the country where there is a voucher program being operated. So the vouchers work like Section 8 vouchers. They're a special kind of voucher for these emergency transfer situations, but they're essentially the housing choice vouchers, what they're called now. They used to be called Section 8, and they're for use in private homes primarily. They're also identifying, you know, where there might be public housing, where they can place people. They're not saying you're not going to get any assistance. They are going to try to place people in other public housing or voucher approved homes, where folks still pay like they do now, a certain percentage of their income based on, you know, what they might be bringing in, how many children they have, et cetera. So they'll have those options. They will have access to relocation specialists. HUD has contracted with a relocation company that will provide counseling to each each individual tenant. Things like, working with them about where they want to go. They can even go do site visits. They can visit the school. They can just get also research on, the school, the services in this community for their child and whatever special needs their child may have. So they're not just, like I said, they're not just saying, see you later. But the rub is that most of them will have to move outside of Caro, because while there may be a few people that can be placed within the city in some units that they can make available, they do not anticipate being able to house 400 people if Elman and McBride complexes are not available.
That was investigative reporter Molly Parker with the Southern Illinois newspaper in Carbondale.